Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Educational Development Corporation Fiscal 2021 Third Quarter Earnings Conference Call. After the speaker's remarks, we will have a question and answer session. To ask a question during the session, please press star then one on your telephone. Please be advised today's conference is being recorded, and if you require any assistance, press star zero. It's now my pleasure to hand the conference over to Chief Executive Officer Randall White. Please go ahead, sir.
Holly, thank you very much. Great introduction there. Folks, I'm going to introduce who's here on the call with me. I've got Craig White, who's our Chief Operating Officer. I've got Dan O'Keefe, who's our Chief Financial Officer. And I've got Heather Cobb, the Chief Sales and Marketing Officer. I think the first item agenda today that I'm going to hand it over to Dan and just give us the information about our third quarter results. Dan?
Thanks, Randall. Here are third quarter results. Net revenues for the third quarter of fiscal 2021 were approximately $66.8 million, up $26 million or 64% from approximately $40.8 million reported in the third quarter of fiscal 2020. Pre-tax profits for the third quarter totaled $5.8 million, an increase of $2 million over the pre-tax profits of $3.8 million reported in the third quarter of last year. Pre-tax profit as a percent of net revenues decreased from 9.4% in the third quarter of fiscal 2020 to 8.7% in the third quarter of fiscal 2021. Earnings in the third quarter of fiscal 21 totaled $4.3 million compared to approximately $2.7 million reported in the third quarter of fiscal 2020. Net earnings grew by 59.3% over the third quarter last year. Earnings per share on a fully diluted basis increased 18 cents a share from 33 cents a share reported in the third quarter of fiscal 2020 to 51 cents a share reported in the third quarter of fiscal 2021. Earnings per share for the quarter increased 55% over last year. This concludes the earnings results, and I will pass the call back over to Randall.
Okay, Dan, thanks. Well, I think you can see that we keep reporting record sales, very happy about that. And I think one of the most critical things is during this busy Christmas season, we kept up with the shipments. That's really important when you have an internet business, and we think we may have been right there with the leaders on shipping. I think we were within 2 or 3 days from receiving orders, getting it shipped out the door. However, along with that, we had some non-recurring expenses that I thought I might tell you about. We increased our shipping charge to the consumer for the first time in about 8 years. We added $1 a box, and of course we were very concerned about that. We didn't know what it would do to affect our revenue, but it seemed to have very little effect. So we're happy about that, so we were able to increase our revenue. Unfortunately, during that same period of time, UPS had a freight rate increase as well as a surcharge. They put a surcharge on their largest customers because apparently we were clogging the system. Not quite familiar with that economic theory, but that was theirs. But I will tell you that the surcharge has now expired, and we have negotiated a new contract, a lower price for the upcoming year. The net of those two things, our increase in revenue and the increase in their shipping, actually was a negative $350,000 or so for the quarter. So the fact that they will not be reoccurring, but our freight increase will, charges will, we think that we'll see increase in our margins coming up. Also, I've got a couple other things that I want to talk about, but for one thing, because of putting in an extra night shift and another temporary line, we have estimated that this quarter was impacted about $575,000 with additional cost. The second shift is certainly not efficient as the first shift, but you got to do it. And we were happy about customer service, not happy about the cost. Now, why do I think these are non-recurring? Well, I'm going to turn you over to Craig here for a minute. Craig, what do you think that, how are we going to do where we don't have these reoccurring charges?
All right, thank you, Randall. So just to kind of reiterate a little bit, we put up a temporary pick line in the middle of the third quarter, and it wasn't as efficient. It was completely a temporary line. It was up and running mid-October, and we actually tore it down mid-December to make room for our new CapEx project. Now, while it only lasted 6 to 8 weeks, we did ship about 45,000 orders on the temporary pick line, so it was necessary, but not the height of efficiency. We tore it down to start our new CapEx project in that same space, which is a double-decker pick and pack and ship lines using a mezzanine, so it's two stories. So we will basically a little bit more than double our current capacity, which would allow us to not have a second shift this next year. So it should be up and running. The project should be complete around the 1st of April to mid-April, so that should be much more efficient. Also, as Randall mentioned, we did have some increased freight costs from UPS. They had a pandemic surcharge throughout most of the year, and then a peak surcharge in the third quarter, which ends tomorrow. But we signed a new contract also in October, which basically capped some of our surcharges, but also such that we have a better discount structure going forward, so we will recoup all of our surcharges that we paid in those last couple quarters. So very happy about that. Also, what I wanted to mention was that the second shift, it was very difficult to have a stable workforce on that second shift. We were constantly hiring and training new people, so that added a bit to our what we'll say one-time non-recurring cost, because we shouldn't have that second shift this next year. So anyway, thanks, Randall. I'll hand it back to you.
Okay. Yeah, we're excited about that. A two-deck, latest technology picking packing system. It's incredible. We feel like that when this is installed online sometime in what?
Around the 1st of April.
Around the 1st of April, yeah. Without these, what we call one-time reoccurring, and they are non-reoccurring because the surcharges already stopped, well, tomorrow, that we feel like that when we do our analysis, that without those charges, we would have hit a little over 10% pre-tax, which is what our goal is. We did about 8.7. Now, last quarter, we did about 9.5, but as we reported, we had a $350,000 bluebird in there from a one-time revenue of having a virtual conference. But without these things, on a go-forward basis, our margins are not declining. If someone in your back room there is telling you, oh no, alert, their margins are going down, we've got it fixed. It's fixed, guys. And we just have to invest, which we have, to make it more efficient, which we're doing. Now, our growth continues to be driven from our increased volume of active consultants in the UBAM division. And to give us a little update on these active consultant status, Heather Cobb, our Chief Marketing Officer, would you kind of talk to us a little bit about that?
I'd be happy to. Thanks, Randall. Last November, we ended with 32,900 active consultants. And this November, we closed with just over 60,000 active consultants. And as we've shared on previous calls, I'll just share again some of the factors that we believe have contributed to that growth over the past year. There's not any one thing, but we do see a combination of things that have caused this growth to happen. We are experiencing an increased demand for supplemental or replacement non-traditional income to lost income due to COVID-19 pandemic. We also started in June a new lower priced entry kit for new consultants. In the past, we have done new consultant kit specials, which have lasted about a month, but we shifted our focus and made that available to everyone basically every day, and we believe that that's had a significant impact on the number of people choosing to join our company. In addition, in February, we rolled out a new consultant success program called Climb. By the time we entered this quarter, we feel like that had really taken hold and people were using that to the maximum potential available. We saw technology improvements, both customer-facing and with our consultants' back-office product suite, as well as continued and increased demand for educational products to use in the home, not only for teaching, but also some of our activity books and items to use for keeping younger siblings busy if you were teaching children while they were distance learning at home. So we feel like all of those factors combined really have had an impact over the year, which has caused this significant increase. So now I'll pass the call back to Randall for further information.
Yeah, Heather and investors out there, I think that's real critical because some people think that our business was aided by COVID, and once it's, if it's ever solved, by the way, that we'll drop back. We're not expecting that at all because that's, as Heather says, that's what's not driving our sales right now. It's more people out there, feet on the street. So we're expecting the increase to continue, and it has right along. We got going again in January, and we're pretty happy with what's coming in. Now, another element I might want to mention, we have a pretty nice balance sheet. During this past year, we paid $8 million in long-term debt. So today, the balance of, and we eliminate all short-term debt, by the way. And today, our current debt level, we have We have $11 million debt, and that's secured by two buildings, which have a value of about $35 million. So we think we're very conservative in that area. Plus, we increased the dividend from 24 cents annually to 40 cents, all from our cash flow. You will see on the balance sheet that we have $31 million cash. I love that. It's great. The problem is we have to have increased inventory as our sales increase. So as we build our inventory, it's already ordered, it's on the way, it's on the water. Unfortunately, one ship is partially underwater that we had 11 containers on, but we have significant inventory coming in, and by the first quarter into the second quarter, the cash will be gone, and we may even dip into a bit of the line, but that's because we're building inventory to allow for the sales that we anticipate in this upcoming year. With that, I hope I've explained that we do feel like that our profit margin is increasing once we eliminate these one-time non-reoccurring and get our efficiency back to the level it has been. So with that, why don't I, if there's absolutely one thing I did not cover, or Heather or Craig, please feel free to ask a question, and we'll have an answer for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then one on your telephone keypad. Once again, press star one to come into the question queue.
We have any questions?
And
if
our
you don't
first,
have any,
we do have some questions. Our first will come from the line of Bill Anderson with Baird.
Baird. V-A-R-D, not Bear. But anyway, I got on the call late, and I don't know if you've released the queue, but I'm wondering, is there any leverage in this model as your sales are increasing more than your operating income or earnings per share, even though you're buying back stock? Did you cover that, or is there something I'm missing there?
We haven't bought stock back in a while, but when you talk about is there leverage in our model, we have a pretty our model basically is we allocate 25% for cost of goods, we allocate 50% for marketing cost, and about 25% left to run our operations, have a profit, and pay dividends. So that model has been the same for about 30-some years. And so while we have nice increases in revenue, it doesn't fall through incrementally as some companies do, because we have to make what falls through incrementally is the fact that the overhead generally doesn't go up significantly with the revenue. But other than that, I think that's a pretty nice fall through that we have the
yeah.
profit levels falling through and nicely. Is that your question?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no economies of scale. There's no volume discounts from the publisher.
Now we do have, by the way, and we get volume discounts for all of them, and I guess that's why we can have profits exceed profits percents exceed revenue growth, which we have. So it's not.
I didn't see that this quarter. Your operating income was up less percentage basis than the revenue increase, and same with the earnings per share. Right?
Okay.
Or am I missing something?
No, you're not missing something other than being late, but I'll forgive you for that. We had some non-recurring expenses.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
We had non-recurring expenses. If you want to compare to last quarter as reported had a $350,000 bluebird because of the profit we made on the virtual convention. That didn't occur again in this quarter, of course. But in this quarter, we had a freight increase from UPS, and we had a surcharge from UPS. They put a surcharge on their largest customers because we were clogging their system. We also then increased our shipping charge for the first time in 8 years, but it didn't totally offset it, and that cost us around $325,000. We had to put in an extra line to accommodate the volume. It wasn't sufficient as the regular lines that we run, and we have estimated that to be about $575,000. And the two of those, by the way, we're putting in a complete new two-tiered picking and packing system that will come on in April that will get everything back on one shift, and we think will get us back on the margins that we have, and we expect that to be 10% on a go-forward basis. So these are temporary things when we had a slight. The difference from the profit margin in the second quarter to the third quarter was about in dollars $700,000, and we have identified about $800,000 to $1 million in non-reoccurring charges. So without those, we would be at around a 10% pre-tax margin.
Okay, that explains it. That's what I wanted to know. Like I said, I didn't see the Q. I don't know, when did you publish the Q yet? Or
yeah, we published the Q.
Is that available?
Good morning. Yeah, it's available.
Okay. That's what I want to know. So say on a given 10% increase in revenue, there is a little, you should at least see a 10% increase in operating income and earnings per share. I mean, that's kind of what I'm trying to get at.
We think so. We had some unusual things this quarter that, I tell you, growth like this, when you grow like this, it doesn't happen accidentally. And I will tell you that one of the best things that happened to us that we didn't have an outage in our system. A lot of companies, because of the volume on the internet this year, due to, I guess, COVID, some fairly large companies had outages, and we didn't. We went right through it and had great customer service, but we spent a little money to do that, but we're putting in a new system to eliminate that. So, yes, I agree with you that if you sell more, you should make more. And
that's what we think is
going to happen.
You think margins are going to be back to normal in Q4?
Four is already halfway done. The surcharge didn't expire till tomorrow. Q4 is the smallest quarter in the year. It's hard to increase margins in the fourth quarter because overhead tends to stay the same, and less volume then doesn't blend well for that. But let's move that out to the first quarter, and I would say yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Our next question will come from the line of Dennis Amato, private investor.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I had one comment and then one question. Comment was you had a great quarter and the stock didn't respond even in a good market, and I suspect it has to do just with what you guys were talking about a minute ago, and it might have been prevented if you had put that explanation in the news release because you sort of didn't get the credit for what was really a pretty good quarter, I think, because a lot of people probably thought just what I heard on the call a minute ago, that margins were shrinking when in fact they weren't. So that's my comment. Well, the question, can you
let me address the comment just a minute. You're right. Traditionally, if you look back, I've been doing these. I came in as an accountant in 19 blah blah, and we've reported about the same for all these years, and we report quarter to the same quarter the previous year. And I see, because I got a call from what I would call a friendly fund who said, hey, here's your problem. I said, we have a great report. What's going wrong? And he said, well, people think your margins are going down because mm-hmm. they're not better than the second quarter. I said, oh, okay. So see, after all these years that I've been here, I still learn stuff. So we will address that, and I agree with you. We had an awfully good report to have the stock go down.
Right. My question had to do with maybe getting a little more clarity on exactly how you obtain new consultants. I went on the website the other day, and I noticed there was very little on there. If somebody heard about your company and was interested in becoming a consultant, there was very little on the website about how they would go about that. So I was just curious of how that process worked.
Heather? You want to talk about that? How do we get new recruits?
Sure.
Besides 1-800, we love you.
Yeah. We actually don't do much advertising or promotion from the corporate standpoint. You know, at this point, as I shared at the end of the third quarter, we have a little over 60,000 active consultants, and our reliance is upon them to tell their friends and family about the business opportunity without mm-hmm. knowing exactly what website you were on. Our consultants are outfitted basically with an e-commerce site that they have available to offer the opportunity, which has a join page and different things like that. And so they do it through parties, they do it through conversations, they do it through just wearing UBAM logo attire out into the community and mm-hmm. people seeing it, asking them questions. So there's various different ways.
Hey, Dennis, I'm going to give you straight in the horse's mouth on how we do it, because we have a controller who's been here how long now?
3 years.
3 years. He's a controller in the company, and he wanted to know more about how this direct selling, multi-level marketing worked. So he signed his wife to be a consultant, because he wanted to study it from the end. He didn't tell us that, but he just signed her up, and because he wanted to make sure he was involved in a 100% honest, ethical company. He told me this later, by the way. And so he did, and he is standing here, and why don't you tell us your experience that you had with how this worked?
Yes, I think, you know, going into it, my wife didn't really know much about EDC or UBAM at all. It was really me pushing her for about 2 months to sign up as part of the company. She signed up not actually hosting a party, which I think is probably not the norm. Most people will host a party first. They will see the rewards and benefits that they get from that, see the success of their consultant, and then sign up that way, which I think is more of the traditional way, and that's actually how her team has been built, is through hosting those parties. But what I can say from our personal experience is this company, from the consultant side, her side of things, has absolutely been a blessing, not only financially, but also for our children, stocking up, you know, the bookshelves that we have at home, and also being a blessing to other families such as ours.
And he had to encourage her a bit. I'm going to add to his story. He's kind of shy. He had to encourage her a bit because she – after a while, she said, I don't know. I'll just keep trying a little bit. And she did, and in her first year, achieved enough success that she's able to walk across the stage. And did I understand that she's earned a trip for two of you to go to Hawaii?
That's right.
I don't know how that's going to work, an employee going to Hawaii, because we're in the financial area. I guess Dan, he may take your spot. But anyway, I thought you might like to hear that from a person who actually did it. His wife did it. She's lovely. That might have something to do with it, but she's had great success but she had encouragement from her husband.
And Dennis, I'll just add
I was actually on the I was on the corporate website, and I was just surprised there wasn't something there.
Dennis, I was going to add one comment. I think that'll answer your question. Our corporate website, you know, is more geared towards, we have two sales divisions. We have our UBAM division, which is our primary division driving our growth right now. But we also sell through our retail division, which we call publishing, and we have about 4,000 different retail accounts. And so our corporate website is kind of not geared towards either one of those two. It's more inclusive of both of them.
Yeah, I understand. I was just surprised there wasn't some place to click to find more information about how to become a consultant.
I think if you Google that, you'll get way more attention than you might imagine.
Okay. Well, that helps. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question will come from the line of Joseph Buller, private investor.
Hi. I have two questions, actually. So the first question is, I know you said that the increase in sales you think now is being driven by the number of active consultants rather than by, you know, people educating more at home because of the pandemic. I'm wondering, what's the basis for that conclusion? Is it the type of titles that are being sold, or you know, why are you making that conclusion?
Well, I'm making the conclusion because what's driving it now is we have some very, very successful people in the organization. We allocate 50% of every retail dollar for marketing. And in a retail store, that means you sell a $10 book to Barnes & Noble for $5, they sell it for $10. And in the direct selling division, they sell it for $10, but there's $5 of commissions, overrides, incentives, what have you. You now have people who make a lot of money, and we have to be careful about this because FTC wants you to give averages. So I can tell you we're working on that, but I also will tell you a story that will bring a tear to your eye that 5 years ago, this lady who was a school teacher in Texas tried to join, and her credit card declined on a $75 charge. She had no money, but we worked it out with her somehow. I didn't know about it, and last month in November, she made $60,000. Well, while she's limited in telling people that because everybody didn't make $60,000, including me, but she actually did, and that drives people to say, you can make that much money selling these, and yes, you can, and while everybody doesn't make 60, we have a pretty high average on what people actually earn compared to the industry, because we have to include every person who signs up, even if they don't sell a book, in the average. But I will tell you, people talking to each other, maybe not posted on a Facebook, but just talking to their groups about, oh, come over to the meeting tonight because this is in our new home. And it's not a lie. That's how they occurred. That's how they bought it. But we have to be very careful now that we don't have exaggerated income claims, and they're not exaggerated. They're just that person's income. So that's what driving it now, when people hear that you actually can stay at home with your children and be with them and earn enough money to stay home, is a real driver in recruiting. And I think Heather wants to add a little bit more to that.
I just want to comment. I know you asked specifically about if we saw a difference in the type of books that they're buying. I would say not necessarily that as much as just seeing the categories that they're buying from. We offered some learning from home categories very early on during the pandemic, back in late March, early April, and saw those categories being shopped from a whole lot more than they are now, which is one of the indicators to us that we have reached basically pure momentum as opposed to just what ended up being a little bit of the catalyst for this growth.
I appreciate it. The second question I had is sort of related, which is, I know you said that part of the reason for the increase in the number of active consultants is, you know, people looking for additional income or other jobs, you know, given the pandemic economy. As hopefully that, you know, improves dramatically over the course of the year, how much attrition are you expecting, if you've been able to forecast, are you going to get in the number of consultants from, you know, people going back to work and so on?
Well, that's a hard one to guess. It's just a guess because what a lot of people are finding out is when they thought they had a solid job and worked there for 10 years, all of a sudden they got furloughed And will it ever come back? Or they, in the back of their head, you know what? This has been kind of fun. I make a little money. I'm going to keep it going on the side just in case. And I think the bulk of our people are part-time. And so if they go back to work and they keep doing this on the side, that's fine too. By the way, we missed an entire market in this COVID thing from the school and library. We've missed probably $35 million by not being able to have school book fairs or what right. we call face-to-face in, like if you have a Green River Festival and they'll have booths out there and people sell the books that way. We haven't had any of that. So we think we can have an increased volume from that and the fact that people have wonderful stories about what this thing has done for their family. They've been able to stay at home and be with the children. So, you know, there's an awful lot of factors here that I'm not sure that I have the answer to, but I think that we're going to continue to grow.
I appreciate it.
And our next question will come from the line of Ed Norsini, private investor.
Hello,
Ed.
Randall. Yeah, how are you?
Good.
I have a question about the pick and pack line. It sounds very interesting. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is this kind of like having a train going down the road and putting another container on top of the train, and the train pulls two containers instead of one? Something like that?
That's a pretty good analogy because I was just out there. And what happens, you got the pick and pack, and then you got a mezzanine right above it. And there'll be people working above. It's two floors. And the technology is way improved because you can introduce an order at the front of the line instead of the back of the line where it has to go through all the sections. So not only are we increasing our output, we are significantly increasing the technology that handles the order. And so we're pretty excited about that. It's pretty space age for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you actually don't need to hire more people to do the same, to do the double output. Is that correct, sort of in that?
Well, now that's not quite correct because that second floor up there still has to have people up there doing it. So mm-hmm. what's more efficient about it is it's all going to be on the day shift. The night shift can be fairly unproductive.
I see. Okay. My other question, Randall. Last year, you had about 30,000 consultants in January, February 2020. Now you have roughly 60,000. Your inventory last year was at 30 million. I just checked the 10Q. Your inventory now is at 47 million. Is that an adequate inventory to handle your capabilities right now?
Well,
are you planning to do?
I will tell you, if you could contact all of our 60,000 people and ask them how much they're going to sell next year, I'd be a little more confident in the answer. We think that we have adequate inventory, although today we probably still have 100 or more titles out of stock, and generally that kills you when you have an out of stock of an item. But this year, we sold so much that we sold what we had, and I think our consultants just said, hey, we're going to make the very best of this. We got the very best thing going since night baseball, and we're going to sell what we got. And they've done that, and we're getting it back in as fast as we can, and we're geared up to have a significant increase in sales, and you can only do it. You can't do it from an empty shelf. So we have inventory coming in that we think will adequately service the amount of sales we have.
I see. Also, for Dan, I'm looking at the balance sheet. Last year, about this time, there was like $9 million in accounts payable. Right now, there's $45 million in accounts payable. Why aren't these bills getting paid?
Let me tell you why. Because about 3 years ago, we kind of got behind. And I called all the suppliers and got increased terms. And so now, instead of having 30 to 60 day terms, we have 120 day terms from most of our vendors. So we have credit. So that we have $31 million cash. Yeah, we got a bunch of payables, but you know that's. But we got the inventory. We're solid, from my viewpoint. So that's my fault that we got the vendors to give us better terms. Dan, you can talk now.
I think you've done a great job answering it. Just to
you're conscious there, Ed. We do pay all our bills when they're due.
Yeah.
We've got a we've got $31 million of cash, and we've got a $10 million line of credit that's not tapped. So we definitely have the ability with cash in our line of credit to cover every payable that's on the balance sheet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Also, I have you on the phone, Dan. Can you summarize HEICO? Or did they pay all the rent last year in 2020? And going forward, 2021, did you have to make any concessions to them?
Yeah. So, and we've had, Ed, we've kind of talked about this on some of the previous calls and some of the previous disclosures in the Qs. Hilti is a worldwide tool manufacturer. They're second to DeWalt, I think, on worldwide sales. They do about $5 billion a year, in which they do about $2.5 billion in North America. And the Tulsa campus that we're on, we call it the Hilti campus because they originally built it in the 80s. And about 4 years ago, they made a worldwide decision to divest of all real estate and just invest in growth, which gave us Randall and Craig and Heather the opportunity to come over here and buy this wonderful complex on 40 acres, 400,000 square foot building on 40 acres for $23 million. And it is a fantastic facility. And Hilti's rent now is more than our mortgage payment. Well, it was more than our original mortgage payment. You know, we paid down $8 million for that mortgage payment. So their lease payment covers our original note. Now it's a source of income to us. This year, when the pandemic hit, Hilti worldwide went, you know, they're in every city with office space. They went to every landlord and said, can we have 90 days of rent deferral to help through the pandemic? And in exchange for that 90-day deferral, they offered to extend their leases 90 days on all their locations. Randall, in a very thoughtful way, immediately jumped on it and said, absolutely, we'll do that for you guys, because they're such a great tenant for us. They do so many things here at the complex that we're at that is, you know, not only community-based, but, you know, just to help us as well. It's just a great relationship.
You can see this building, the room we're in right now, all the furniture, everything in here was left to us by Hilti. Every time they get new furniture, we get new furniture. They left over $1 million worth of pallet racks in the warehouse. They left, I don't know how much, the lighted cubicles they left in the space. So I tell you, we have an incredible tenant, and when they wanted a three-month deferral on rent, I said, giddy up. We got the best deal here that you could ever imagine, and we're very happy about it. And they're great customers. We've got 10 more years on their original lease with a 5-year option. So Hilti is they're incredible, and we love them. They take care of us.
Okay, great.
Once again, to ask a question, press star 1. Our next question is a follow-up from Bill Anderson with Baird.
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate what the one gentleman said about the website. I think it would behoove you to spend a little money on the site. It's pretty archaic, I guess would be the word.
I think the answer to that is we don't really put much emphasis on that, because the main emphasis on the website for the direct selling side of the business, that's the only people who'd want to go to that website, maybe an investor to find something. And hey, if you get nothing else, you got a phone number on there, call me if you want to know anything. We just don't use that website for.
And to your point there, Randall, we do, and to Bill's, Bill, we do have that as a project. Craig, do you want to kind of talk about it?
We've almost doubled our IT staff in the last 12 months, so that is a project for probably the first quarter of next fiscal year. So
it's not a high priority for us because we don't recruit from it. That's done another way. It's just out there, and yeah, we may look archaic. It's just not our emphasis because we don't think it's a revenue-generating project. But not to say it couldn't be better. If you think that website's bad, you got to look at our front door.
He'll put a big door in there for you.
No, they got a big fancy one they spent $250,000 on, and we got a door that's gray and goes in the side of the warehouse. But we're happy because we're very conservative here and don't want to spend shareholders' money excessively because I'm the largest one.
Yeah, and I'm speaking as an investor, and I think you want to...
Bill, just to further kind of some of Craig's comments and Heather's too, we do have a very robust UBAM website, and every one of our 60,000 consultants has their own website that we host for them. Right. And so we have, you know, over 60,000 different websites that we host that are all tied to our e-commerce system. So I think what we're trying to say is you're not necessarily seeing the business side of our e-commerce. You're seeing our corporate website, which, to your point, is needs to be updated. We agree completely. But I encourage you to go to myubam.com, www.myubam.com, and kind of and it'll give you an image of the websites that all of our consultants use.
Yeah, we're not exactly got hay in our teeth in Oklahoma. It's just not the site that we had to work on, because let me tell you, when you go from 20,000 to 60,000 consultants that are female, there are a lot of needs that are expressed there, and we try to stay up with them the very best we can.
Right. Well, I know you've been spending money on technology over the years, so I assume there had to be a better interface with your consultants. But from the standpoint of an investor, it's not a good site. So.
No, I hear you.
And that's where I'm speaking from.
I didn't even tell you last time I actually saw it, but I hear you, and it's a little bit of an embarrassment, but it's not as bad as our front door.
Fair enough.
Okay. Do you have any other questions?
Not at this time.
Okay. We must have covered everything. And could I say one more time before everybody goes? Our profit margins are not declining. So... if that's why you're selling stock off, all you guys that shorted that stock, too bad for you, because the news is only going to get better. But you just pick your poison. Short our stock. People have done it before. We'll see how that comes out. Oh, I'm off the call?
No.
So anyway, hey, everybody makes your own decisions. I want you to have every bit of knowledge you have about this company, because it's an amazing company. I can't be more proud of it. And we're growing, and it's profitable. 7 years, 6 years ago, we made $875,000 pre-tax for the whole year. This year we'll probably do, $16-18 million. So we're doing something right here. And thank you guys for being investors or future investors. And if you have any other calls, you can actually call me and I'll talk to you. Thanks for being on the call.
Once again, we'd like to thank you for participating on today's conference call. You may now disconnect.